welcome to What's Ailing America with your host, Dr. Rebecca Carling, the world's only court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases.
Namaste, and welcome back to another edition of What's Ailing America, one of your most important weapons in fighting the war on truth being waged against the people by the mainstream media. And thank you, God, for protecting BBS Radio, which had a fire on both sides of it last week. And I'm so grateful that they were protected and got out in time and nothing was destroyed. The views expressed on this broadcast are not endorsed by BBS Radio, its staff, or management, but represent the views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers. Additionally, the information I share with you is not to be construed as medical advice. Rather, I am merely teaching you what I would do if I were you after much research on each subject. To learn about my work explaining and reversing vaccine-induced diseases, please go to the www.drcarling.com and listen to the interview of myself by the Chiropractic Leadership Alliance to learn how I transformed from a trauma surgeon to a court-qualified expert in vaccine-induced diseases and how the medical mafia has responded to my stepping out of the box. Make sure you sign up for the updates on my site as I send out important information you need to know to my list. One of the most important is also posted at the top of my webpage, Horrors of Vaccination Exposed. I strongly suggest all of you check that out. It's a book from the 1920s, and it's got all the legal reasons why compulsory vaccination is unconstitutional. And this is what we need to stop this insanity. I do consults for people and pets with autoimmune disease, seizures, or cancer, and teach you how to reverse these conditions with natural therapies. I have clients all over the world and create your individual protocols based solely on history alone. You do not need to travel to North Carolina to see me in person. Please call me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week to learn how I do consults. My phone number is also on my website. I ask you to consider the information I share with you using your own innate intelligence, the common sense you were all given by your Creator. Do not believe anything I tell you. Check things out for yourself. For we have been lied to about everything, and each person must develop the ability to discern the truth of themselves if we are to extricate ourselves from the matrix of darkness that has evolved because we sat by and did nothing, especially with the legion of disinformers out there who are exposing themselves every day. My guests and I love to answer your questions, so feel free to call in. You can use your first name only if you like, and all shows are archived. The numbers to call in are listed on the bbsradio.com website station, too, and include the following. Toll-free USA and Canada, 888-228-4494. Toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. You can also use Skype at BBS Radio or PalTalk at bbsradio_com. Every week I will answer the question, what's ailing America, with a different response, as well as share the good news as to what can heal America on many levels. My goal is to assist in the evolution of consciousness on this planet. For awareness of the truth shall set us free. And I know that once enough of us have become aware that we have been lied to about everything, including the fact that vaccines are good when they are actually inoculations with disease, and thus are the true weapons of mass destruction. And as you will read in the Horrors of Vaccination book posted on my website from the 1920s, you will know that this has been known for almost a century. Together, we will be able to stop this holocaust on the health of people and pets. That truth, when put on top of the mountain of lies upon which this country is built, will cause the entire mountain of lies to crumble. And remember, as Voltaire stated, we are not only responsible for what we do, but also for what we don't do, people. Silence is consent. I thank the Americans Bulletin for sponsoring this show. The Americans Bulletin is one of the last bastions of a non-controlled, non-corporate press. Recent issues have carried articles on the planned use of water as a weapon of mass destruction, the true purpose behind the Social Security number, whether or not taxes are legal, how the financial system has been tweaked to make you a slave of the state, what you can do about it, alternative health, the vaccination issue, and a whole lot more. And I'm very excited that thanks to reporter Janet Fallon, who will be our guest tonight, the next edition of the American's Bulletin is going to have her very well-researched and documented story on what was done to Joey Carli to torture him for my work, and I'm very grateful for that. You can subscribe to the American's Bulletin by visiting the website, americansbulletin.com, or by calling 541-773-2756. The American's Bulletin, because you need to know the truth. Only $40 a year, six issues. It's the First Amendment forum for a free-thinking people. And remember, I'm also now on republicbroadcasting.org every Wednesday at 12 noon Eastern Time for 2 hours. And I strongly suggest that you go to that site and look at the archive for yesterday, because we started to discuss this subject yesterday, and it's such a long story. You may want to hear more of the details that we might not have time to go into everything tonight about the deadly corruption in probate courts. And this is actually Janet Fallon's personal story, which she is putting on the record because of what's being done to her on a never-ending basis, the persecution and other things that are happening, and also to honor her mother. And I just want to say that I heard this yesterday. The devil is only one, but true evil is due to a collaboration between those with no conscience. What has happened to Janet Fallon and myself, for that matter, could be an X-Files episode. And you listeners are paying for it all. And remember that silence is consent. And once enough of us get a backbone and rise up and say, we're not going to take this anymore, it's going to be funny how it all works out. Janet Fallon, back in 2004, while a columnist at the Santa Monica Daily Press, had begun to research the water as a weapon story, and there's archives on this station and RBN about this very important story. You got to check this out, folks. It's scary stuff. But yes, in fact, they've been installing remote control water valves into pretty much every home in America for the last 30 years to deliver poison to us when the time is right. And we've tried to get the person on the show who claims to know about the poison, but when Janet called him, he stated that the poison was H2O. So very strange things are happening. But anyways, when Janet made her initial request for water records tendered at the City Hall in Santa Monica, immediately the machine moved into gear. Within 6 hours of her first request, she received a phone call from editor Carolyn Zachariasen, who informed her that she had received a call from the city attorney's office and told her, with some anxiety infusing her voice, that she had not authorized Janet to ask questions about water and that she was endangering this woman's position as editor of the Daily Press. When it became clear that this was unresolvable, she quit in protest. Now, how many reporters do you know that quit in protest when they attempt to censure them, folks? I don't know of any. And Janet is one of my heroes, and thankfully the American's Bulletin now has her as one of their most important staff writers. And it's really amazing, not only was the water as a weapon story so important, but now she's covering these probate murders, and she's discussed that on the show as well. But tonight we're going to talk about what got her to realize about this dangerous situation, which was her own personal experience. So thank you very much for joining me again, Janet.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Rebecca.
And I know that you've actually covered this also, and one thing that you had written on the article that you sent me, and I want to state that she also sent me all kinds of documentation and proof of everything she says on yesterday's show and today's show. Janet stated that Soylent Green operation is being run out of the local probate courts, turning the elderly into cash. And this is so important, folks, and in a few weeks I'm going to have Dr. Shirley Moore on, who's going to tell you how they're stealing children and destroying them and turning them into cash. When are you going to get upset, people? Are you going to wait for them to come knocking on your door to take you away, just like happened in Nazi Germany? Because guess what? There's nobody to come in on a white night and save America, because America is now the one that's doing all the bad things. So it's going to be the people that do something, and I really hope that you're realizing it's time. It's time for us to do something. So I don't know where you want to start with, Janet. Please just start wherever you like. If you'd like to discuss what's happening now that these minions in particular, this David Horsebull and this Melody Scott now were invited to be on the show, and now they know that we're talking about them on the air. I don't know if you want to mention what transpired when you spoke to their office or whatever you'd like to discuss. Just take it away.
Well, I sure would like to give some a background as to who these people are, but Melody Scott and David Horsebull were featured very prominently in one of the articles that we've been running in the series of probate murders. And they were in, actually, Probate Murders Part 2, and if you Google that, you can read something about them. But we've now run three in the series of the probate murders, and the second did focus on the Redlands situation, which is pretty much supporting Melody Scott and David Horsebull in their pursuit of people's estates. I do have personal history with them because of what they did to my mother, which is really what I would like to be discussing on this show. But I had a very Twilight Zone-y conversation today with Melody Scott's receptionist, Jenny Plant. They have come to realize that I'm discussing them on the air. And Jenny Plant said to me, she asked me if I had Melody's written permission to use her name on the radio. And I laughed, and I said, you know, we have a First Amendment in this country, and I don't need her permission to talk about her behavior. And well, Jenny said to me, she says, you can't call the office anymore. This is unacceptable behavior. Your behavior is unacceptable. And I said, what is unacceptable? Recognizing that I have a First Amendment right. She goes, there you go again. It's unacceptable. And so I laughed, and I said, go back to call me the Russia.
Yeah, I just want to comment on that because, you see, this is so important, folks, and the reason Janet is talking about these things and naming names and the reason that I have things on my website about what was done with Joey is because we have all the proof, we have all the documentation, and obviously Janet checked out my story totally before she wrote the article that's going to be in the next American's Bulletin. You see, it would be a blessing if these people come after us for slander, because that's the only way you get the actual case into the court without them sidebarring into some other issue. And I just want to also point out, and then I'll let you take it away, Janet, that this is no vendetta of Janet Phelan against these minions. I've had other people on the show that were affected by these people as well. They have a business of killing people and stealing their estates. This is not like a one situation type thing. This is what these people do.
Yes, I really urge that you check out Probate Murders Part 2 to read what these people are actually doing. And the actual subtitle of that article is Melody Scott and the State of California in the Business of Death. Yes. So these people have gotten themselves embedded and are basically participating in a program that is going on throughout the country. And personally, I see it as a eugenics program coupled yes. with asset seizure and involuntary asset redistribution, and certainly not to the parties who made the money or to their heirs. But I did want to specifically discuss my mother's situation
yes.
On the air again because, first of all, my mother needs to be honored. For the wonderful person she was and the despicable and horrendous thing that happened to her needs to be known. This needs to be said because people need to know what is really going on in this country. And if you only pay attention to the mainstream media, you'll think things are getting a little strange, but mostly copacetic. No, they're not. People are being murdered left and right, and if you dare to speak up and to attempt to protect someone who is targeted, you end up in terrible trouble. Now, I really am taking off my reporter's hat for this show and discussing a personal situation, and it's difficult to do as a reporter because we are trained to focus, you know, elsewhere and to be almost, you know, at least hypothetically like a camera and to be able to record and report. And when you attempt to turn the camera on yourself, it does get a little confusing and difficult, and it simply is not something that I'm usually comfortable doing. However, I found myself in a whole embroiled pot of trouble because of these people, and the trouble is now doggedly following me around, and there is now some entrapment going on concerning my residence in the Medford Police Department, and I need to go public about the endangerment, and in order to do so, I need to discuss the situations that developed.
Let me just state, you know, because it's very important, because, see, people have to realize, you know, you think that the police are there to protect you. Well, the police are in on this. The district attorney's office knows what's going on. Doesn't this go up as high as the governor in California?
It goes all the way up to the federal government.
Right. So that's my point, is that, you know, just imagine, folks, you call the police because your place has been broken into and there's weird stuff there, whatever, and the police refuse to tell you or tell you, you know, get over it, things like this, or beat you up. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's going on. Anyways, this touches
the nerve
of me.
Yes.
So go ahead.
The police, to clarify, the police are there to protect the state. The state is not the people. The state is not the people. The state is pretty much the those in government. So if those in government start doing very bad things, then a soul voice cries out in the wilderness, you know, hey, look what you're doing, you better stop that, then that person may end up being not only her needs and her welfare ignored by the police, she may end up actually, as you know personally, Rebecca, attacked by the police, which is unfortunately ends up to be a very ugly part of this story. So I'm going to start, as I started to say, There was a hit. There was a hit on my mother. And how could that happen? How could an older woman who was simply retired have a hit on her? And I have to explain a little bit about who my family was, particularly who my father was. James Phelan was an investigative reporter and best-selling author who was consistently evidencing his integrity and his incorruptibility throughout his career, and he was involved in some extremely significant stories, and he made enemies with people, corrupt people in the government almost wherever he went. He did pivotal work on the Kennedy assassination. He covered J. Edgar Hoover's FBI. His article, he ended up on Dick Nixon's enemies list when his article on the Nixon-Hughes loan essentially derailed Dick Nixon's bid for the California gubernatorial seat. Growing up, we knew that our phone was tapped. I mean, back then the technology was not as slick as it is now, and we'd be on the phone and it'd be all this spitting and whirring, and I thought it was funny. I mean, I used to kind of chortle into the phone, you know, hey, J. Edgar, you know, how do you like that, J. Edgar? You still wearing that dress, J. Edgar? I mean, you know, I thought that he was gay. I thought that this was, you know, it was a real trip. It turned out that those who were watching Dad wreaked their vengeance on his family after my father passed away. And the sins of the fathers shall be visited on, you know, the mothers and the daughters, apparently. My father passed away in 1997 of lung cancer, and leaving my mother, who had been a clinical psychologist, a PhD, she had worked her entire life. She's actually been a government employee. She had worked for the City of Long Beach at the Health Department as a supervisor and therapist in alcohol and drug abuse, and she'd also had a private practice. You know, she was in a at this point in her early 80s, she was retired. And in 2000, 3 years after my dad passed away, in October of 2000, 1 month before the election which coronated King George Bush, I was approached romantically by a man named Jack Smith, Jack Leonard Smith. He had answered I had put a personal ad into the LA Weekly. I was 48 years old. I was divorced. I had been having some health problems. I was getting sort of worried that I was, you know, never going to find another husband. and I really was husband hunting, and he answered my ad. And Jack could not have presented himself as a more perfect applicant for the position. He was obviously very bright. He was very verbal. He loved the same things I did. He loved theater. He loved ballet. I mean, everything. Just like me, his father was, I believe, the English Catholic. My father had been Irish Catholic. Just like me, he said, his mother had been Jewish. My mother was Jewish. So this is the technique called mirroring, where somebody presents themselves, you know, as very similar to you in order to bond. So I was very ripe for the picking at that point in time, and I became quite enamored of him. And it does turn out that Jack L. Smith is actually Special Agent Jack L. Smith. And I did not know that. That was not disclosed to me. He has a job in a company called iMagic, which is in Burbank, California, which, according to my private investigator, who I hired after the situation totally blew up in my face, he affirmed that Jack was an agent, and that the iMagic, he said, appeared to be a cutout, which means, you know, it's a front agency. I don't know that as a matter of fact, but the research done by the PI was certainly strongly supporting that perception. So,
and I just want to say, we'll have to write a book someday on our similar experiences with these black op boyfriends, because it's really amazing how they do come into your life and pretend to be, you know, the dream that you've always been looking for, and they're actually
to destroy you. Right, while they work to destroy you, and that's exactly what Jack did. A few months into our relationship, suddenly I'm told by my landlady, I have to move out, and she wouldn't give me a reason, and she became very insistent. I thought it was very strange, because nobody had ever said, you have to move out, and, you know, like that, but she was getting to the point, she's calling me and calling me, and I was looking for a place to live, and also, very strangely, I couldn't find another place to live. Didn't occur to me at that point that my phone calls were being surveilled and that things were being set up in my life. But given that I couldn't find a place to live, I called my new boyfriend and said, I gotta move, and I can't, you know, can I move in with you? And he goes, oh, yes. So I was living in Long Beach. He had a condo he had his 9/11 address, 7911 and 18th Norton Avenue in West Hollywood, and I ended up moving into his condo for a period of time with him. And during the period of time that I was living with him, and then I did later on get my own place, but I was spending most of my time with him in West Hollywood, things began to happen. And they began to happen to my mother. I already knew at the time that Jack showed up that my sister had been leeching money off the estate. She had been living with my parents before my father passed away, and continued on living with my mother. She'd had some real medical and other problems, and had been living with the parents. And when my father passed away, she started stealing from the estate. And we knew that money was just flying out of the accounts. We weren't exactly sure how, but it was becoming more and more evident. And Jack was like, encouraging, oh, well, you're going to have to, you know, deal with this and blah, blah, blah. And Jack steered me and my mother into the office of attorney J. David Horsepool, the one that I had mentioned earlier on in this broadcast. J. David Horsepool is the primary lawyer for Melody Scott, who has become quite infamous of late. Even the L.A. Times ran an expose on her a couple of years ago. She is considered to be a very nefarious and thieving and duplicitous person whose business is to take care of the elderly. She's a conservator and a fiduciary, and her business is called Care Incorporated. It is in Redlands. So my mother and I ended up in David Horsepool's office, And before we knew it, my mother was signing a nomination that Melody Scott would be her conservator. Now, we just thought that this meant bookkeeping. We didn't realize at that point in time that my mother had basically signed over the dominion and her rights to make decisions to control any aspect of her life. And she did essentially sign her death sentence. Now, Melody Scott moved very quickly. She put aides in my mother's home purportedly to take care of her, although no one was needed to take care of her before. And she started funneling, even though she had stated in those initial meetings that she was going to protect the estate from Judy, she started funneling massive amounts of money to my sister and almost immediately cut me off of the trust. My sister called this money, at one point she called it hush money. At that point, I was very surprised. I said, well, what's that about, Judy? I said, is that what's happening now? Because bad things were happening under Melody's thought to my mother. And Judy kind of leered at me and said, no, it's for what's going to happen later. And what happened later was my mother signed this nomination for a conservatorship in December of 2001, and she very quickly began to suffer under the quote-unquote care of Melody Scott. Melody Scott, people who were working in my mother's home would threaten me. If I came by, they'd threaten to call the police. They wouldn't let me talk to my mother. Things were going on. My mother's health was getting very bad. My mother, as I said, was in her early 80s. She had had some heart problems. She had had some 2 bypass surgeries, but she was really pretty healthy. Other than that, she was on heart medicine and probably a couple of other things. And in June of 2002, after being aware that my mother's health was suffering, and it was very, very upsetting to me. I was going down from West Hollywood to Temecula just about every chance I could get to see her. I got a call from her in June of 2002, and she said, I am very ill, and no one is paying attention to me. Now, that's the big red flag. So I got in the car. I sped from the 90 miles from West Hollywood to Temecula, and what I found there in terms of my mother's situation was the most horrible thing I've ever seen. My mother could barely walk. She was almost out of her head with confusion. It was, I had never in my life seen her so ill. And I said, you know, oh my goodness, do you want to go to the emergency room? And yes, she did. But she was so ill that she had to lay down and rest 2 hours before she could actually walk to the garage to get into the car. And this was a woman who was very active, very ambulatory, very lively, and suddenly she was just going down. So I took her to Rancho Springs Hospital. Her doctor showed up. The emergency doctor checked her out. Her doctor showed up. She was evaluated. Her blood pressure was skyrocketing, and goodness knows, you know, what else they found. But they admitted her, and they put her into evaluation, and according to the medical records, which I now have, they found her on the floor with a pulse of 37. They immediately trundled her into surgery and put in a pacemaker, and my mother's life was saved. So they found her on the floor of the hospital room.
Yes. And you had called the conservator to tell her you were doing this, right? That you were
I called the conservator to let her know I was taking her to the hospital. Judy kept saying, no, no, you know, you don't need to. And I'm looking at my mother, and I'm thinking, you know, my sister has clearly lost her mind. So I took her in. I called the conservator's office, let her know. I took my mother there, and they fixed her up. Now, I believe 3 days later, I got served with a restraining order. Melody Scott and David Horsbull had gone to court, and they had declared, it was emergency. They declared to the court, and you saw that application for the restraining order. They declared that my actions in taking my mother to the hospital unnecessarily, omitting the fact that she had life-saving cardiac surgery, they said that it was detrimental to my mother's well-being. I was dangerous and needed to be restrained.
Yes.
Now, this is pretty strange.
Yes.
So I think, okay, well, these people are bad people. I already knew that they were that they were doing, you know, really pretty horrific things. So this, I thought, okay, this will be easy. I'll just, you know, go into the restraining order hearing, and I will tell the judge that he needs to subpoena the medical records. As my mother was then under a temporary conservatorship, I could not get the medical records myself. Now, this is where it began to get weird. When I came back to the house, and this is very important, after taking my mother to the hospital, I began, you know, to kind of look around the house to figure out what happened there. How'd she get so sick? And I looked at my mother's medications, and lo and behold, no one had given my mother her heart medicine for at least 2 months. There were, the bottles had been filled. The pharmacy had filled them. I believe they were filling them on a monthly basis. Nobody bothered to give my mother her medicine. And there were some other indications of some other, shall we say, at least criminal negligence. If you're supposed to be taking care of an elderly person and giving them their medicine, to neglect to give them the medicine that the doctor believes is critical to keep them healthy is at least criminal negligence. Well, I called the police. The police came, and all kinds of heck broke loose. Melody Scott is calling and telling them to lock me up. My sister's running into her room and hiding. I insist that the police count the medication. And I'm there. I see them count what's in the pill bottles. And lo and behold, the police produce a report that not only miscounts the pills, but misnames them. They're saying that her pills for her, possibly for short-term memory loss or something not as critical as heart medicine. So at that point, I call the police department to let them know they made a mistake, and they go, don't ever call us again. Uh-huh. Now, it's getting weird and weird and weird. So I go to court on August 2nd of 2002, and I brought with me Jack Smith. Now, August 2nd of 2002, oh, gosh, was it August 1st or 2nd? Am I misstating that? It was either August 1st or 2nd. I'm sorry. I may have gotten the date one day off. But that was also the date for the hearing on the permanent conservatorship, because first you're under a temporary and then you go into a permanent. So the hearing on the permanent conservatorship was right before the hearing on the restraining order. And Melody Scott got permanent conservatorship over my mother. My mother's court-appointed attorney, Gilbert Gutierrez, sat there like a bump on the log and didn't say one word. My mother had spoken to him about how she didn't want the conservator. My mother had written letters to the court. She didn't want the conservator. This conservator was mean and nasty. Gilbert Gutierrez sat there and spoke not one word. So I tried to carry the weight of this myself, but the judge was clearly going to grant the petition for conservatorship, and he did. And right after that was scheduled my restraining order. And I was there with Jack Smith. We sat in that court until court closed. And then we were told to leave. It was never called to hearing. And Judge Stephen Cunnison signed my restraining order, permanently restraining me from my mother without ever hearing my testimony or calling the case into court. Now, this is a violation of the right to due process, and if people don't believe this can happen, I sent to Rebecca Carley, and actually up on the web are two documents which support this contention. One of them is the judge's own minute order for that hearing, and basically he lists charges of elder abuse, Janet Phelan. That would be me, the abuser who takes the sick mother to the hospital in order to have her life saved. But no one is listed as being in court. And minute orders always list which parties are in court. Yes. Judge Stephen Cunnison never called it on the docket. He signed it in chambers. Apparently, he didn't want to hear me say subpoena the medical records. The second document was produced by Jack Smith. I insisted. I almost forced him to, and he states also the same thing, that we came to court, there was the hearing on the conservatorship, we waited and waited, and it was never called. Now, interestingly enough, Jack Smith did reveal a bit of his corruption in this matter when he double-dated that document. And it is on the web on deadly corruption in local probate court. You can see the document yourself. He put two dates at the top of the letter. And the meaning of this is actually a document has to be fixed in time by a date. And by putting two dates on it, he was attempting to gut, you know, and gut the power of the document and make it legally invalid. Now,
right. And I wanted to say I've seen all these documents you're discussing, and that obviously shows how the PSYOP's boyfriend knew to do that once you had, you know, basically compelled him to document what he went through with you. He did that on purpose to do exactly
right.
What you said. Yes.
Right. Now, Jack had been, you know, I've been living with him, and we've been all involved, and he was just so supportive about my struggle with Melody Scott and verbally, and but stuff started going on when I was living with him and I was going through this nightmare. At one point in time, we started getting phone calls, and I'd pick up the phone, and there wouldn't be anyone there, and this began to happen rather consistently, and I got curious, and I started to star 69 the calls, which is to call back who called, and in a three-week period, 25 times, it was Melody Scott.
Hmm.
So at that point, I should have run screaming out of that house, realizing that she was trying to reach him and hanging up when I picked up the phone, but at that point, I was deeply in love. My mother was in terrible danger. I was clinging to him like a life raft.
And you can't even conceive that somebody that you care about could be that evil, and that's exactly how they get you.
That's exactly how they get you, because you trust them. You come to put your faith and trust in them, and all the time they are working behind your back. And Jack Smith was actually, he stole documents from me, and quite a bit worse. Jack Smith, at some point in time, it became necessary, apparently somebody decided on a higher level that they really needed to get rid of me. This stuff was happening with my mother. I was making police reports. I was catching the police lying on the police reports. I was writing letters to the DA. The reports to the DA about the police, you know, non-functionality in terms of pursuing these attempted murder. This went to an assistant district attorney named Mark Mandio. He disappeared that report. I contacted the attorney general's office. I started calling the media. I had my father's, special contact book with names of reporters all over the country. I'm calling everybody. I'm yelling and screaming about judges violating due process and criminalizing someone to save someone's life. And at some point, Jack Smith tried to warn me that I was going to be killed. He was speaking the way people talk when they know they're speaking on tapped phones. And it stuck in my head what he said. It stuck in my head enough that I can remember it to this day. That it seemed a very odd thing to say, and now I do know that he was trying to warn me, but he did, in fact, set it up. Now, after this happened with this, my mother being restrained from my mother, my mother never returned home from the hospital. She was moved then. She was moved like in a shell game from facility to facility, and I was allowed, there was a slight mitigation of the restraining order. They were trying to do an entrapment, and that's a whole other story, but I was allowed to see her a few times. And on September 28th of 2002, she was in a nursing home in Redlands, California, and I went in there and I brought her a document to sign, which had been prepared by an attorney in L.A. named Jeff Lessman, and it was her demand for a jury trial. Under conservatorship law, you can have a jury decide whether or not you need the conservatorship. And considering what Judge Stephen Cunnison was doing at that time in violating constitutional protections, it was obvious to me that we'd have a better shake with the jury. And,
definitely.
Jeff Lessman must have been leaned on, and he sent my mother's demand, which was signed by her on September 28, 2002, he sent it to the judge in a letter. Now, papers need to be filed in court. They're called moving papers. You don't send a letter to the judge that doesn't have the weight of a filing
right.
in court.
So right. he basically also, they might have thrown
in the back.
Garbage. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he sold you out. Somebody whispered in his ear, and he sold you out. And this happens all the time as well. That's what the lawyers do. They do things like that, or they'll be late for a filing date, or do things like that in order to intentionally betray their client. Very common.
Right. Well, this is what happened, and when I pointed it out to Jeff, he screamed at me and said, "Don't ever talk to me again." And I said, "That's fine with me." So at that point, right after September 28th, I had cause to leave Jack. He had become very verbally threatening to me, and
the Jekyll and Hyde phase. Yeah.
Well, he was trying to get me out of there because I was supposed to. Die, and apparently they didn't want me to die in his condo. It might have looked a little too suspicious. So he started becoming very threatening. He'd charge me. He'd run up to me, threatening me. Like, I guess he was supposed to scare me to death or something. And I kept saying, "Oh, Jack, you need counseling." I was trying to be such a good, girlfriend. But anyway, so then he threatened to smash me on the head with a hammer until my brains ran out and I died.
Oh.
And then, of course, I left. And then
yeah,
I came back to pick something up, and he physically assaulted me. And it was not a serious assault, but it was enough to raise my level of alarm. I called the police, and the police came and, picked him up and let him go. And when I pulled up the police report, because I was at that point, I left him for good at that point, but I got very suspicious. And they had completely finessed the police report. There was no mention of the felony death threat. There was no mention of a physical assault of any real nature, and they basically made it look like nothing had happened. He went to court on it. All charges were dismissed, and end of story.
Yeah.
And no mention of the smash you on the head with a hammer until your brains run out and you die. So at that point, I was really getting... I really began to realize, I finally began to start connecting the dots, the calls from Melody Scott, all of this other stuff, and when I did hire a PI to check him out, very interesting things came back. Jack Smith didn't exist before 1987, even though he was purportedly born in 1954. There was no record of him. There's no record. He simply dropped out of the sky into that condo in 1987. And there were some other indications, which are, rather convoluted, but the PI came back to me and said, "Your boyfriend was a Fed." So I left Jack and moved back into that house cottage I had in Long Beach alone, and immediately that place, it got extremely dangerous. My house almost burnt down while I was asleep. I had, on another occasion, had gone down to Riverside to try to address my mother's situation. I came back, and it was a cottage. It was a rear house. My landlady lived in the front house. And I'm walking back towards my little house, and I hear her say, "Oh, she's here. Quick, call the police." And I, what's that about? So I walk to my cottage, and it's just been ransacked. Now, but I knew that the police were already coming. So I knew there had to be another issue. So I started looking around. Why is she calling the police? And I had little pink pills all over my floor. They planted drugs.
Which
so,
is very common. Mm-hmm.
This is very common. So, and actually, this is a similar entrapment that I'm dealing with now with the Medford Police Department, which I will get to hopefully before the end of the show. So I locked and bolted the door. I closed all the curtains. And I started to scoop and flush, and within 5 minutes, the police showed up. And they're banging on the door, and I made like a ghost. I held my breath. They couldn't see in through the blinds and the curtains, and I just waited until they left. And they left.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't get better. Things were, it was getting... So I moved out. And on December 31st of 2002, I moved into my new place. I was thinking it's going to be okay now. It's going to get better. It's going to get better. Still not realizing that the federal hit, which is what this was on my mother, was now extending to me. And the new place, I lasted there. I moved in December 31st. On January 3rd, things started immediately to go on, and I walked into the police department on January 3rd of 2003. There had been a threat, and I, you know, still wasn't astute enough to realize that even with all the bad behavior by police officers finessing reports, trying to arrest me for drugs, I walked into the police department requesting assistance. On January 3rd, I was met by Officer Laura Dawson. He was in uniform. He handcuffed me. He threw me into a squad car, and he told me that I was going to be terminated. He told me I was going to be given a drug overdose and die. He told me he was operating under the protection of the president. Interestingly enough, it was on January 6th of 2003, which was 3 days later, that that Bush biographer Jim Hatfield died of a drug overdose. Same MO.
Interesting.
Within 3 days.
And
apparently
this is also,
they like to kill reporters that way.
Yeah, and I think that Tim Russert was one of the recent examples of that. And this protection...
He died of a heart attack. It was not listed as a drug overdose. We don't know what happened with...
Yeah, well, we know that the CIA can make heart attacks happen very easily. But this protection of the president thing, this is the same excuse for the water as a weapon situation, too, right?
Protection... Protection is listed in Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act as a reason to poison people. If you check out Section 817 of the U.S. Patriot Act, is probably the umbrella overriding piece of legislation that governs the water project and the other poison projects, where it's basically saying it's okay to poison people if you're doing it protectively. Now, I assume what the protection means is you're not protecting the person you're poisoning, you're protecting another party. Protection of the president is basically the job of the Secret Service.
Right.
And this phrase, if you do a Google search on this, you'll see that this phrase is now popping up like dandelions. It is being littered in all kinds of documents. It's in medical privacy statements, and there's a reason for that, and hopefully at some point we can do a show on that, Rebecca, and talk about what that means, why it's in your medical privacy statement, and it is. This basically, protection of the president, what I always say is if you start hearing people leveling that phrase at you, duck.
Right.
Because it basically means you're in big trouble.
Right.
Lauren Dawson shoved me in his squad car. He took me, the windows were darkened. I couldn't see where we were going. We rode for about 15 to 20 minutes. He dragged me out of the squad car. It was some like basement somewhere. And he brought me into this room. It was horrible. It looked like a cell. It was not a cell. It was not in a police facility. But there were other people. There were about five or six other people there. I asked all of them if they were police officers. They were not in uniform. Only Dawson was. And they all replied that they were. And I was there for just a few minutes, and one of the gentlemen had a syringe, and he just rushed me and stuck it in my right arm, and I collapsed like a sack of potatoes. And I, God must have put up his hand of protection because I woke up. I was in a coma for 2 days. I woke up on a heart monitor. And
in a hospital.
I woke up in Long Beach Community Hospital. I was told that I was transported from Harbor General Hospital, that they had taken me to Harbor General. I had some problems getting out of that hospital safely. And that's a story which I probably don't have time to tell, but I...
Right, yeah, I just want to say we only have 6 minutes left, so I do encourage people to listen to the RBN show yesterday because we had more time. But before I let you finish whatever you can finish, I just want to say to the listeners, I know this is very scary stuff. I've had similar things happen to me. But what you have to realize, folks, is to not be afraid. We have to stop this because they're doing this all over the place. And if this is the kind of country in which you want to live, then you have to stand up once you know what's happening to some people. Because once they do it to you and your loved ones, it's a lot more difficult to stand up. Anyways, go ahead, Janet.
Okay. Well, as I was saying, I did manage to get out of that hospital alive. I went back to that apartment I had rented. It was now, I believe, January 6th. And I went back to that apartment I had rented 7 days earlier to find that it was occupied by someone else. And I hit the streets. I was 50 years old, and I had nowhere to live. And very shortly, they seized my bank account, and I had no money. And I want to say a little more about my mother. At that point in time, apparently, given the fact that I started to survive, I survived the assault, I survived the hospital, and then other things started happening to me, and I just kept surviving. Apparently, they shifted the focus off Mom, and they shifted their sights on me. They kept my mother alive. She was alive until May of 2004. In September of 2000, I didn't know this. I didn't know where my mother was. I assumed she was dead. I was homeless. I was searching obituaries. Nobody would tell me anything. And in September of 2003, I left the country. There was assaultive, terrible stuff happening. And I couldn't even, you know, close the door behind me because I was homeless. I went down to Mexico, and just to make the story very short, I was picked up by the federales, and I was detained, and I was in a torture facility for 30 days, also which I managed to get out of alive, although at that point when I got out, I was 90 pounds. I was so sick from the repeated assaults that I couldn't even keep down a piece of bread. So my mother was alive. I was, Melody Scott suddenly started courting me. She was sending me money. You can see your mother. There was more entrapment going on. I sidestepped the entrapment. Thank you, God, for allowing me to stay alive and do my work. And then when I sidestepped that major entrapment, suddenly my mother was dead. And that's when the siege really, really began against me. And
I just want to point out, they didn't tell you she was dead until sometime after she was dead. They didn't tell you where she was buried or anything, did they?
No, they didn't tell me she had died until weeks afterwards. No, this
right.
is cruelty. This is emotional, you know, brutality, but these people yes. obviously are brutal.
Torture.
So
yes.
So I decided at that point that I was going to use my journalistic skills to do everything I can to make the situation that we're in our country clear to others. This is just about the first time I have come forward about my own situation. I have been focusing my research on how they're planning to kill a lot of people. One of the ways is what's going on in the probate courts. That is a eugenics program. The guardianship issue is a eugenics program that is aimed at the elderly and disabled, just like they did in Nazi Germany. They were killing off the elderly and disabled. The water weapon is aimed at different populations, but I decided at that point in time that I would use whatever journalistic skills I have as a writer and now as a radio talk show host, and I do have my own show on KSKQ in Ashland, Oregon.
Wait, let's give the website. It's KSKQ, KingSamKingQueen.org.
.org. My show is One If By Land. It airs Wednesdays between 5 and 6 Pacific time. And we're getting a lot of really good guests on it, and I urge people to listen to the show. So my life changed irrevocably. I did finally, after 3.5 years, get off the streets. I was already doing radio all over the country, and I now, thank goodness, have my job at the American's Bulletin, where I write for the American's Bulletin, and I do the radio show in Ashland, Oregon. I have dedicated my life to telling the truth about what this country is doing to populations of people who are at risk. And my belief is that on some level, given the power of the weapons that this country has and the brutality with which it treats its truth tellers and truth seekers, we are all at risk. But I urge you to read Water as a Weapon, read The Probate Murders, read Water Wars, an update. All of these are on the web. These are all eugenics programs. And for those who don't know what eugenics means, it basically means that groups of people are considered undesirable and will be eliminated.
Exactly.
And this is the fact of America.
Yes,
this is
and you can put that word you can put that word E-U-G-E-N-I-C-S into Google. And they have eugenics groups. Planned Parenthood is involved in this. Of course, inoculations are another main way that they're doing it. And if you think it's an accident, folks, that the food, tomatoes now have salmonella, we've had strawberry, spinach, do you think all that's an accident? I don't think so. But anyways, Janet, we've run out of time. The time goes so fast when we're talking about anything because you're so knowledgeable. So I want to thank you so much for being a guest on the show and for doing the story on Joey that's going to be coming out in the next edition of the American's Bulletin. And for everything you do to protect America, and you are a true heroine, and I'm honored to be your associate, Batman.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay.
Let the force be with you.
Yes, and keep in touch. I always like to keep a close eye on you and know you're okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
God bless
you.
Rebecca.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.